Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. So have you heard of Corner Store Caroline? That's what the woman in Flatbush, who is white, who called the cops on a 9-year-old boy who is black, whose backpack bumped into her as she waited at the counter in the local bodega, is being referred to as.
No, I want the cops here right now. No.
Video shot Wednesday outside a Brooklyn convenience store. Has become the latest focus of outrage over alleged racism, with over 5 million views.
That from NBC News. The cops didn't come. She eventually apologized to the boy, but the incident is being taken seriously enough to warrant a community conversation convened last night by Brooklyn Borough President Eric Adams. It's the latest incident of a culture clash that involves race and class accompanying gentrification in New York City's changing neighborhoods. Now, it so happens that the latest episode of the Gimlet podcast, Science Versus, takes on gentrification and tries to get beyond the conventional wisdom to the data, the science. And they specifically explore the idea that as richer and often white people move in, the cops are called more. To talk about what they found, I am joined by Wendy Zuckerman, science journalist and host of Science Versus, and producer Merrill Horn, who happens to have a PhD in neuroscience and did a lot of the data analysis on this question. Wendy and Merrill, welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having us.
So, who wants to start to tell us a little bit of how you at Science Versus approach these kinds of questions generally? Wendy?
So we often try and take out as much as possible the emotion from quite heady issues such as gentrification and look solely at the data, at the science. And so with an episode like this one for gentrification, we ask questions like, Do lots of people end up getting displaced in a gentrifying community? It's something you hear a lot, like all these white people are coming in, they're kicking out the locals. And so we really try and look at what the science is saying about how many people are leaving their homes in gentrifying neighborhoods versus those in other neighborhoods. And when it comes to this 311 issue, this is also something that we heard as we were doing research for this episode. We went to some protests on gentrification, asked people what are their main concerns about what's happening to their neighborhood. And something we did hear was people saying, you know, people who've been in the neighborhood a long time, you know, these newcomers coming in, they're calling the cops on us for doing things that we were always doing. And so, again, we took the same approach rather than, you know, interviewing people about it. We wanted to look at the data and see, you know, are we actually seeing 311 calls rising in these gentrifying neighborhoods?
So I see you've got these three central questions. One is gentrification forcing longtime residents out of their homes. Two, do newcomers call the cops on their neighbors more often in gentrifying communities? And three, does gentrification lead to things like more jobs and better schools? And if it does, who really benefits? So on the one you just mentioned, whether gentrification causes dislocation, you talked to Lance Freeman at Columbia University, and his studies of New York City find a surprising answer that people are being dislocated, but that's unfortunately happening everywhere, not necessarily in more neighborhoods or more in neighborhoods that richer people now find desirable. Here's a clip from your podcast.
Well, I think part of what's going on is that focusing on gentrification may be missing the larger problem, which is that people are being forcibly removed, but it's just that gentrification is not necessarily making the problem worse.
So, Merrill, that clip is going to surprise a lot of listeners. Do you want to explain some of the data behind that?
Yeah, sure. So it surprised Lance as well, actually. So he went into this question looking to see if the, you know, this idea that new residents are forcing people out holds up when you look at the numbers. And surprisingly, he found that there were high rates of residents moving out of their apartments across all sorts of neighborhoods in New York City. So this is true for gentrifying neighborhoods, but it's also unfortunately true for low-income neighborhoods, and the rates at which people are leaving their apartments are actually higher in the gentrifying neighborhoods. But
what metrics did you use to compare? Because I would imagine that if people are being forced out of their homes without gentrification in the neighborhood, then landlords are finding ways to raise the rent even without what we call gentrification, you know, maybe redevelopment of the housing stock and richer, whiter people moving in.
Yeah, so he looked at census data, which just measures people leaving for all sorts of reasons. Separately, there have been other studies that look at eviction, and the results there are pretty mixed as well. It seems like evictions are happening in gentrifying neighborhoods. They're also happening in low-income neighborhoods. And so what's actually going on, he thinks, is that it's about who's replacing who's filling into these apartments once the longtime residents are being forced out. And it seems like that's what's really changing in gentrifying neighborhoods. These new, richer, often more white residents are moving in.
Right. So even if landlords, Wendy, aren't pushing people at a more rapid clip in gentrifying neighborhoods, longtime residents become a smaller part of their neighborhoods as more warehouses or sugar factories are converted to luxury lofts. For example, here's Professor Freeman again.
People tend to overlook that neighborhoods don't stand still. People are always moving in and out. And so as soon as you change the flow of the people who move out look different from the people moving in, the neighborhoods are going to change.
Want to expand on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think part of what his study looked at, as Meryl mentioned, was that the census tract data, which really covers the fact that people are leaving their apartments, and it encompasses all sorts of reasons that people would leave their apartments. So unfortunately, when we looked at eviction data, it's very hard to track, as you mentioned, how people are getting evicted and how many people are getting evicted, because sometimes studies will say, track who's going to eviction court, whereas we know that a tiny fraction of people who get evicted from their homes are actually end up like take this to eviction court. So we don't know how much to trust that data. But what Lance was doing, even though he tried to control for evictions, was that he was really looking at the way that people are leaving their homes for any sort of reason, because he's just looking at if you leave your home. So if it's because rents are rising, if it's because you're sick of New York and just want to move to the country or move to Jersey or whatever, it's just the fact that you're leaving, or if it's because you just don't like your neighborhood anymore for whatever reason. And so he does include these factors. And what he's ultimately saying is that, yes, neighborhoods are changing, but it doesn't seem to be because there is this mass exodus of people. It's really the new people coming in that seems to be the decisive factor. That's what his research and other research has shown.
Wendy Zukerman speaking there with us, host of the podcast Science Versus, along with producer Meryl Horn, who happens to have a PhD in neuroscience and does a lot of the data analysis for the current podcast episode on gentrification. And I guess this brings us to the question that pertains to, quote, corner store Caroline in Brooklyn the other day, who joins Permit Patty and Barbecue Becky and others in the social media hall of shame for white women who call the cops on black children over what seemed to be nothing to get upset about. So what ties together these instances as you explore them in your podcast?
Well, as you mentioned, the fact that they're all white, they're white women, but there is, of course, Jogger Joe, who is a white man. So this doesn't seem to be gender based. I mean, what we really wanted to look into was these are four incidences. There's probably five or six out there that have gone viral. But how widespread is this issue? And critically, is gentrification to blame? Because gentrification is really sort of the boogeyman in all of this. Is this happening more because you have white people moving into communities and using the police as some sort of kind of, you know, technical tech support rather than kind of talking to their neighbors about issues? And so what Meryl did, you know, because we looked at the actual, you know, we looked at Google Scholar and we looked for the scientific data, and we couldn't find any scientist that had tracked whether 311 calls had gone up in gentrifying areas. So enter our PhD in neuroscience, Meryl Horn, to actually do the analysis.
Yeah, so the 311 data is publicly available for New York City. And so we looked at whether noise complaints, which includes things like people complaining about music being too loud or their neighbors talking loudly, we looked to see if the noise complaints were going up in gentrifying neighborhoods faster than other neighborhoods. And we found that, yes, actually, it's true. If you look at these complaints over time, the noise complaints in gentrifying areas are actually rising much faster than these other neighborhoods.
And the virality of those videos would seem to speak to a much larger trend of newcomers to a neighborhood turning to the police to enforce their social norms. You talked to one guy at a protest who brought up an example that we've actually talked about previously on this show.
for instance, in Harlem, there were drummers there for 40 years. And then once they built the new condo, the people in the condo kept calling 311 until the drumming stopped. It's a neighborhood tradition, and you killed it.
So, Merrill, this is not a new concept, and it's kind of age old, isn't it? And it's so based on class. People who are wealthier tend more to be quieter, or at least that's the stereotype and the perception. I don't know if you looked at data to back that up or refute it. People who are working class across racial lines just tend to have louder lifestyles. Is that a thing?
Well, we don't know if that's true. It could just be that the, you know, somebody in these neighborhoods is complaining more. It's theoretically possible that the longtime residents are the ones who are complaining more to 311, but we spoke to a researcher who did not think that that was what was happening. This was Roy Kramer from Villanova University. He said that, "I don't think the longtime predominantly minority residents call their neighborhoods about noise complaints nearly as often as the new white neighbors." And this is based on his work in the ground in these communities, which backs up this idea that, yeah, the longtime residents are going to be more likely to try to work this out on their own.
Want to add to that, Wendy?
I mean, I think the idea that sort of richer people tend to be quiet, we don't have any data on that. I think what we are finding, though, is this trend that people who are richer do have in America at least, do seem to have a relationship with cops where they feel comfortable calling them for all sorts of things. And this is not widespread. And then when you have gentrification coming in and sort of mixing people who perhaps otherwise weren't living together before, you do have these hotbeds. And it was interesting to see in that video with Cornerstone Caroline that she knew exactly what was happening. She was like self-aware, and she said, you know, sort of self-aware, because she said, you know, "Oh, I'm just a white woman and you're going to call the cops on me." So she knew she was part of this bigger picture, and yet for some reason couldn't help herself and kept doing this.
Jenny in Bushwick, you're on WNYC with Wendy Zuckerman and Merrill Horn from the podcast Science Versus. Hi, Jenny.
Hi. I'm calling from Bushwick. I moved here 5 years ago from Greenpoint, and I was warned by friends that it was a really noisy neighborhood that they didn't always love living in. But I was really careful when I searched for a place to live. I didn't want anything that really smelled of gentrification, so I didn't move into a new building or new construction. I live with a black family downstairs, and I'm on their third floor. The mother has lived in this neighborhood for generations, and there's three generations living with me right now. Excuse me. Mm-hmm. The mother, my landlady, and her daughter, and my landlady's husband. So I try to be very cognizant of, you know, racial dynamics, and I live in Bushwick, and I work in East New York as a teacher with all black students. And I always kind of question myself, like, when is it appropriate to call the police? Like, I see things that I think are dangerous and shouldn't be allowed. Like, I've seen, you know, guys racing motorcycles up and down empty streets. There's a guy who lives down the street who leaves his dog out, like a young puppy, chained tightly to a window on like a 2-foot leash at most, chain. All the time. So, you know, like, I'm not sure if these are appropriate things for calling the police about or not. And I also try to think about, you know, even if they're appropriate, where does it lead for the black person? Mm-hmm. Is it, you know, are they going to get like a fair, you know, treatment by the police after that's over? So it's a big question. Yeah. I mean, constantly in my mind. And then I wanted to say about the noise complaints, when I chose this apartment, I chose a residential street, a street that didn't have a lot of big buildings, that were all like, you know, 2 or 3 family homes. So my street is extremely quieter, far quieter than it ever was in Greenpoint. But it does get noisy occasionally. The only time I've ever called 911 or 311 or anything like that is a very, very loud party that went until like 3 in the morning. And I was told that they don't really answer noise complaints anyway. But I did want to say that poor people probably want sleep as much as rich people. And they want peace and quiet as much as rich people. But I think that in a neighborhood like Bushwick, if you know your neighbors really well, you may be more hesitant to call the police if they're mm-hmm. acting inappropriately or causing noise. And also, if you're, you know, not a legal resident, you're more afraid to call the police. But that doesn't mean that you don't want the same peace and quiet that a white person or a rich person mm-hmm. or okay. even a middle class person mm-hmm. may want for their family.
Jenny, thank you so much for that call. I really appreciate it. And Wendy, wow, what a candid and tortured reflection on sort of the cognitive dissonance of a gentrifier.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is, it's a complicated situation for everyone. From the people that we spoke to and the researchers about what you should do if you're in a situation where you kind of feel like you want to call the cops but you're not sure, the message we heard over and over again was if you can, talk to your neighbors. Like, if you feel comfortable, talk to your neighbors. And not only the ones who are perhaps making the noise or perhaps doing the wheelies or whatever, but also just to find out, like, what is the norm in this neighborhood? You're moving into a space that you were not in before. So try and as much as you can, and it can be difficult, but to be a part of that community and find out what are the community norms.
Nick in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Nick.
Hi. I'm from the same neighborhood as the Corner Store Carolyn situation. And so I had heard about this right when it happened and saw it. And the strange thing about it is it may have a little to do with gentrification. I am part of the gentrification here. I moved in about 9 years ago. I think she was clearly suffering from mental illness, which I think is the bigger issue with this. If she were in power or had been able to exercise power against this poor boy, then that would be different. But the boy's mother was a policewoman herself and showed her badge right away. And perhaps that's why this woman called the police. I mean, I don't know, but her whole thing just seemed like sad and disturbed and mentally ill.
And I think there's been some reporting to that effect as well. And yet, I don't know if this is in your bucket as a neuroscientist, Merrill, but, you know, for people who are off in mental health terms, I mean, their problems might still attach to racial or other preconceptions that they have in ways that their problematic mental health conditions get expressed.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, the reason we wanted to do this analysis is to try to see if, you know, these cases that you hear about on, you know, social media are unique examples, or if they are part of a larger trend. And it's hard to say for any one particular case what's really going on. But because we found that overall these calls are rising more in gentrifying neighborhoods, it does suggest that there is some phenomenon that is, you know, more substantial that's underlying all of these calls. It's not just a unique case here and there, that there is something that this is pointing to.
Can we get briefly, before we run out of time, to the third question that you explore in the podcast? Does gentrification lead to things like more jobs and better schools and neighborhoods? And if it does, who really benefits? It's kind of a mixed bag, Wendy, right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the story that you tend to hear living in Brooklyn is that gentrification is just, as I mentioned, a boogeyman. It's just a bad thing. Whereas there are good economic arguments as to why gentrification might not always be bad. And part of that involves the stream of wealth that comes into a neighborhood when you have gentrification. And what we found, though, was that it is a mixed bag. So you tend to find, the research finds, I think fairly consistently, that you have an increase in businesses with gentrification. And then with that comes comes more jobs. The idea of who gets those jobs, we really need more research. We spoke to one woman who at NYU who did a study on this, but it was very unclear. She was just like, I don't know what to make of this data just yet. So who gets those jobs is a question. And then this question of crime, whether the crime goes down in a gentrifying area. You hear people making very big claims about gentrification always brings lower crime. When you look at the data, it's a much more complicated picture. But I think overall, you do see at least over time, a picture is showing that gentrification does tend to bring lower crime.
Data? Meryl?
Yeah, but unfortunately, with a lot of these questions, it's just there isn't enough data yet. And so, you know, we took it upon ourselves in this case to do our own research analysis, which we usually don't do for our show. But in this case, we just really wanted to try to answer these questions that clearly the public, you know, wants to know about. And so I hope researchers get more on this so we have more peer-reviewed literature soon.
All right. As we run out of time with Wendy Zukerman, science journalist and host of Science Versus, podcast from Gimlet, and producer Meryl Horn, who happens to have a PhD in neuroscience and did a lot of the data analysis for their current episode. Just to say about this podcast, other pillars of conventional wisdom that you've tackled range from the benefits of a ketogenic diet, what does the data really show on that, or veganism, to the effects of nuclear war, and then Bigfoot. Do you specialize in areas where the science leads to counterintuitive results?
I would say that generally the science leads to counterintuitive results in our general thinking. We tend to have very strong opinions about things that we know very little about. And so our show, and I would say just science more broadly, is just working very hard to counter that.
Wendy Zukerman and Meryl Horn from Science Versus. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you.